you've probably noticed an increase in people commuting by bike. There's also been a rise in bike fatalities, especially among people in their 40s and 50s. In 2013, there were 743 cyclist fatalities across the country. Well, maybe your city is responding by creating more bike lanes, or bike lanes with barriers like planters, or maybe there's a sidewalk, then a line of parked cars, then a bike lane, then a cement barrier, then traffic. But bike lanes are controversial. Drivers in Boulder, Colorado complained that they caused traffic backups, so the lanes were removed. And where protected bike lanes are popular, they stop at intersections. And that's where protected intersections come in. It's common in the Netherlands, but no one in the U.S. really got it until a young former video game designer named Nick Falbo made a video that urban planners understood. Here he is describing the main elements.
A corner refuge island, a forward stop bar for bicyclists, a setback bike and pedestrian crossing, and bicycle-friendly signal phasing.
Now, Davis, California has a protected intersection. So does Salt Lake City, Utah. Robin Hutchinson is Salt Lake's transportation director. She joins us now. Hi, Robin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
We also have Jennifer Dill, who heads the National Institute for Transportation and Communities at Portland State University there in Portland, Oregon. Jennifer, welcome to you as well.
Thank you very much.
And let's start with you, Jennifer. I've been reading about this. I've seen pictures of these protected intersections, and I still can't picture it. So what is a protected intersection?
The whole idea is more and more cities, as you mentioned, are building protected bike lanes. And the more you physically separate that lane, let's say through parked cars or planters, the farther away it is from the moving motor vehicles. The problem is when you get to the intersection and, for example, cars want to turn right, but bicyclists might want to go straight through the intersection, and that's where you have potential conflict. Mm. And a lot of cities so far in the U.S. have dealt with that by what we call mixing zones, which is where the cars and the bikes start to merge somehow to maneuver through the intersection. The idea behind the protected intersection is to continue that protected lane through the intersection, to have a little bit of protection on the corner, some physical protection, but also move the lane further away from the cars.
So there's going to be these stop lines for the bicyclists that'll be ahead of where the traffic is stopped.
The cars are going to be stopped further back. The bicyclists are going to be further in front. And then ideally, you would also separate those movements with traffic signals. So you'd have a special bike signal just for the bicyclist.
So you might, you know, if you're in the car, you're going to be looking at the bicyclist ahead of you, and they can make eye contact.
Exactly. The way it works right now, when you just have a striped lane by the side of the road, a driver might be turning right, and a bicyclist could easily be in their blind spot.
And there's going to be these islands in this intersection?
Yes. This is hard to describe without a picture. So the idea of having this island that comes out further than many of our current intersection corners would, it's really going to slow down the motor vehicle.
This kind of oval-shaped thing that they have to drive around.
Yeah.
You've got it right, only ours are football-shaped.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay, so Robin Hutchinson there is in Salt Lake. What does that island do? It forces the cars around. So you have moving traffic, island, and then a lane. Is that presumably where bikes would go? In other words, do bikes continue in their bike lane and now this little island is on their left and the sidewalk is on their right?
Yes. And let's say you're bicycling and you're approaching an intersection and you want to make a right-hand turn. You used to have to mix it up with cars and hope that the car can see you. And in many instances, you still do have to do that. But in this situation, you're always protected behind either the curb of the protected bike lane or that football-shaped thing that we have out there that won't allow cars into that space. So you can take a free right without ever interfering with car traffic, and vice versa. Great for drivers, too. Drivers can completely predict where the bikes are going to be and where they're going to go now.
What about the bikes that are going straight? You said that they pull ahead of the cars at the stoplight, but if it's a green light, if they're sailing down and don't see somebody turning right, I mean, how does this help that kind of a fatality when a cyclist is going straight and the car's turning? Is it just that it slows the car's turn down?
It definitely does that. I would recommend in a situation where you have high volumes of right-turning cars and high volumes of bicyclists going straight that you have a separate signal phase for the bicyclist. So the bicyclist going straight would have a green light, and the cars turning right would have a red light.
Okay, so Robin, you're going to have the grand opening later this month for your city's protected intersection. This is downtown. You're doing this, but I've been to Salt Lake frequently, love it. Oh my gosh, people ride their bikes there. But your roads, compared to some of the roads back east, are a mile wide. You know, you can put these football-shaped little islands a few feet from every curb.
They're not quite a mile wide, but they are wide. And that offers us some opportunity, but it is also a pretty big problem when it comes to pedestrian and bicyclist safety. People on bikes and people walking are faced with higher speed traffic. The longer distance you can see, the more likely the car is going to be speeding. So we have real challenges, especially at our crossings. Crossing these wide streets takes a long time. You're exposed for a very long time, whether you're on a bike or you're walking. And this is the condition we're trying to treat.
You want more people to ride bikes than drive cars.
Well, there's a couple things happening here. We do have some air quality challenges, especially in the winter and then the dead of summer as well. And 55% of our pollution is produced by mobile source or tailpipe emissions. And so we're responding to really high demand for making it more bicycle friendly. And people are going to ride if they feel safe. And they probably won't if they don't.
Oh my God, as I said, tons of biking there. I couldn't believe people biking all the way up to Snowbird, up the mountain, and then riding their bikes.
A different kind of biking,
oh,
yes.
Yeah, and riding their bikes back down again, which is astonishing.
Yeah.
Jennifer Dill, but put this in a national context. Boston is considering it. We have tiny, old, thin streets. And this didn't really catch on until a former video game maker there in your city, Portland, Oregon, adopted an idea from a Dutch designer. What happened?
Nick Falbo, yes. I'm actually proud to say he's a former student of mine from Portland State University, too. And, you know, a design that's been used in the Netherlands for many years because they have a lot of protected bike lanes, and they've been using this intersection design for a while. And he was able to really visualize it and also put it in a U.S. context in a very simple 5-minute video that shows how it could work. And it's great that there's cities out there like Salt Lake City that are going to be trying it out. And I think one of the things that we're doing at the center that I run is we're about to start a research project where we'll be evaluating these types of intersections in the U.S. to see how well they do work.
Well, and in some cities, there's been really fierce resistance. So, Robin, what are your critics saying where you are?
Well, we've certainly had our share of critics, and especially the first time we tried the protected bike lane on 300 South, we had a lot of folks that were pretty concerned about what it would do. There is always a trade-off in transportation. And on that particular corridor, we reduced the amount of parking by about 30%. And that was very difficult for people. But we've worked with them. And while there are still some businesses on that corridor that are upset, many, I would say, have learn to really accept and even like the protected bike lane. In fact, we recently released a progress report, just key measures, and it shows that business is up on that corridor.
But Jennifer, how does this come to a city like Boston or other East Coast cities, Philadelphia, that I can't imagine where you'd put the island?
It will be tricky. The smaller your intersection, it's going to be trickier, particularly if you have a lot of large vehicles making those turns. You may not be able to employ all aspects of the design. For example, perhaps not the island part of it. But there's other parts of it that perhaps you could implement. In particular, the separate bike traffic signal phase for bicyclists, if the volume of cyclists warrants it.
That's Jennifer Dill of the National Institute for Transportation and Communities at Portland State University. We've also been speaking with Robin Hutchison, Transportation Director for Salt Lake City. Robin, Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And by the way, student Nick Falbo is now Senior Planner at Alta Planning and Design there in Portland, Oregon. You can see his video of a protected intersection as well as a picture of the Salt Lake City version at hereandnow.org. So what do you think? Protected intersections, they've been put in a new development in Austin, Texas, but they haven't been used there yet. And a development is different from a downtown. So cyclists, we'd love to hear your thoughts on protected intersections at hereandnow.org.